There's been a lot of debate in Australia, in the Australian beer community this week, after Australian Brewers News ran a call for consumers to boycott beers that the brewer had specifically requested not be sold in Australia. This came about after we ran an article relating to Sierra Nevada's 30th anniversary that included a call to toast the brewery with a bottle of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. When we spoke to the brewery to check some of the article with them, they told us that as a company they were against the practice of grey market beer, and they've asked their distributed partners to stop shipping unauthorised beer. Once we dug a little bit more into the issue, we asked ourselves, if the brewer doesn't want us to be drinking his beer, why should we be? And as a magazine, we made the call for beer lovers to boycott grey imports. This has really fired passions over the last week, and so we've invited one of the key brewers in the issue to talk about it from his point of view. The brewer is Greg Cook from Stone Brewing, brewer of one of the beers that are really highly sought after down under, but also one of the brewers who is very definitely against having his beers sold down under. Greg Cook, welcome to Australian Brews News.
Thank you, sir. Nice to be talking with you.
Yeah, look, thank you very much for your time. I guess just to get started, tell me a little bit about Stone Brewing. Tell me a little bit about the beers that you make.
Well, at Stone, we're known for being one of the progenitors of the West Coast style of beer, and what that means is predominantly hoppy, big, citrusy, just a very aggressive, fresh, aromatic, hoppy character, and a distinct and definite bitterness with our beers. At the time that we started brewing them in 1996, these were styles of beers and approaches to beer that was pretty uncommon. It's now become quite a popular approach to beer. And, we're unabashed hopheads. And we felt it was, our basic philosophy from the beginning is there are plenty of breweries making beer for the masses. We want to make beers that we have more personal respect for, that we would just gravitate towards ourselves. And if somebody likes them, great. And if they don't, well, that's not our issue. So we just started off in our own direction.
The funny thing about this whole issue, and it's something that I keep coming back to, is your fairly individual approach is one of the things that makes your beers so highly sought after. And people keep coming back to, we want your beers, shouldn't we be able to try them?
Oh, okay, yeah, well. That's all fine and well. So here's what I have to say to all our friends in the wonderful country of Australia. You're not getting our beers. You're not getting what would qualify as your beer, our beers. You're getting something that I would pour down the drain. And if I was there and I saw you about to take a sip of the beer and I knew how it was tasting, I would take it out of your hand and I'd pour it on the ground, because that's not our beer. That is a damaged version of a beer. It's just like a filmmaker wouldn't want somebody watching a videotaped copy of their movie that somebody illegally, recorded in a movie theater and then dubbed and copied another four or five times, and it just looks like crap. Of course the filmmaker is going to be very upset about that. One, that you went outside of the channels of viewing it legitimately, so it's clearly an illegal version. And two, that what you're getting, what you're experiencing, is so absolutely, is such an absolutely poor representation. That it's shocking, and the filmmaker themselves would say, this is not worth watching in this format. And I'm saying, our beer, when damaged, and it is damaged out there in Australia, there's no question about it, it's not worth drinking. You shouldn't drink it. You should pour it down the drain.
A lot of the guys, again, you throw that up and say, look, you're not getting the beer. He wants you to get his beer the best that he can. They say, look, we know it's not perfect, but it's still interesting, and it shows us what's going on internationally. And it's
doing great. Oh, it doesn't tell you what's going on. Here. Sorry, I got to interrupt on that. It doesn't tell you what's going on. It's a horrible facsimile. So, I needed to interrupt on that specific point. Yeah, I get you. And so what I say to Australian beer fans, retailers, and brewers is, hey, you guys can have that stuff brewed in Australia. You can do it there. Support the brewers who are brewing interesting things in Australia. The young brewers, the new brewers, the small guys, that let them know, give them the feedback. But, you know, I've had plenty of my own experiences with this. I used to, you know, have some British beers from time to time here in the U.S. And, you know, I was pretty much, meh, British beers. Yeah, they're all right. They're different. But it wasn't something that I could particularly get behind. It was nice as a diversion from time to time. And then I went to the U.K. and I had them fresh. And, oh, it was epiphanous. And I realized just how bad a condition the beers were that I had been drinking. And, of course, you know, any British brewer I've talked to is appalled with that idea.
The answer that they come up with is, well, why don't you send it down? We'll pay the costs that it takes to get the beers down here. Send it refrigerated, send it quickly, and we'll buy it in good condition.
But they won't. And I understand that desire and that call, but unfortunately it's dare I say, a bit naive. Here's the situation. Australia's very far away. We know that. Australia is across the equator. So what we'd have to do is we'd have to temperature control our beer. And by the way, we're our own wholesaler in Southern California, and we have a 100% refrigerated fleet. So that's the standard. And when we send our beer to one state away, three states away, across the country here in the U.S., it's all refrigerated. We do not warm ship, or sometimes called dry shipping. Anyways, it's 100% refrigerated. So we'll have to refrigerate our beer, sending it down to Australia. It's a long ways away, so it's going to be as expensive as hell. It's then going to go into the Australian distribution system, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that refrigeration is in the distribution system is very common.
No, it's not.
So it's not. So already the standards that we've set for ourselves within a close range to our own home can't even be put into effect in Australia. And then, frankly, I appreciate the fact that there are some beer fans in Australia that are aware of Stone, but we can pretty much guess that 99.99% of Australians have never heard of Stone and maybe haven't even figured out that they care. I understand that. So when it does eventually get to the retailer, what's the demand going to be? Well, frankly, the demand's going to be pretty low. And coupled with the fact of how expensive it is, you know, even the people that really want it it's going to be at best a special occasion beer for them because it's so expensive.
And I guess that's you know, there's a couple of issues in there. A lot of the retailers that I've spoken to this week, and none of them really want to put their heads up and talk about it, but the ones that I've spoken to say, look, there are one or two that will just bring it in anyway, and we've got to compete against them. But then again, it does sound like they're the sort of beers that even the real full-on beer geeks are buying one or two bottles of to try it. It's not something that they buy a six-pack of and you know, drink on a regular occasion.
Right, which means that we have an untenable situation. We don't have a flow that ensures that you can get regular, fresh shipments that are being treated properly along every step of the way, and also that it arrives in a reasonable price. And you know what? Buying a less expensive but ruined beer is not a reasonable price because you got no value for your money. You're getting something that I've just said, and I'll repeat again. I would pour down the drain instead of drinking. So if, you know, $1, what, you know, is too much to pay for that. So
I have to say that in...
Go ahead.
Just in reading a lot of the forums, and this has sparked conversation on Beer Advocate and some of the Canadian community, beer communities. Even a lot of the Canadian guys are saying that they've had some fairly bad examples of your beers as well. And, you know, it's a much shorter shipping distance.
Canadian guys?
Yeah.
Well, go figure, because we don't ship to Canada. And so what does that mean? It's another situation where they're gray marketing it. And what happens is unethical retailers or wholesalers here in the United States, which most of them are not in this category, but there's a few, will sell beer knowing that it's going to go out of the country, and they'll sell old beer. It's basically dumping it because they know they can't sell it because they can't get away with it with their own customer base. So they're just shipping it off to another country. And then I hear about it, and then I react out, and I'm not happy. Because why am I not happy? Because we put a lot of time and effort and energy into making what we hope to be is great beer. And the reaction that somebody has, at best, under those circumstances is, meh, stone, just a bunch of talk, bunch of hype, not worth it. And you know what? I don't blame you for having that reaction with old, damaged beer. And if you have that reaction with fresh beer and you come to our brewery or you come to the United States and you have that reaction, well, then who cares what you think, because I don't know if I really trust your taste anyways. But you can join the other billions of people on this planet that have no appreciation for the beer that we make. Trust me, you have safety in numbers if you don't like our beer.
Now, I mean, a lot of the guys that are saying that, you know, that they hear you say that, and they say, well, you know, are you a businessman or are you an artisan? You know, once you sell it into the market, you lose control of your beer.
That's why we spend so much time and energy in maintaining control of our beer. We have our own distribution fleet in Southern California. It's refrigerated. We send it out refrigerated. We have contracts with our wholesalers in the United States that require them to refrigerate our beer. So, yes, of course there's some level of which we can't control everything. But I don't know if you noticed, we're pretty highly rated on Rate Beer and Beer Advocate. And there's a reason. And it's not just because we brew good beer, but because we brew great beer and we make sure that it's stewarded properly throughout the supply chain, the distribution chain. And we put a lot of energy in that. And, you know, again, if you have our beer and outside of that system, I'm not going to blame you if it doesn't taste good or if you think it doesn't taste good.
But again, the guys that are getting this say, look, I know beer. I know it's not going to be at its best quality, but I still want to try it.
That's not trying it. You're not trying it. You're trying something that I would pour down the drain. Okay, then judge it from that. So realize, write in your review, I am intentionally purchasing, overpaying for damaged beer, and I'm going to review beer that I know in advance is damaged and unacceptable to the brewer. Go for it. How many people really want to consciously agree to or admit that they're doing that?
And to me, that's the heart of the issue. I can't work out how all of these guys say that they love good beer, and yet knowingly, there are a whole lot of beers that brewers don't really care are available down here. But when there's a brewer that really doesn't want it for that reason, I just sort of think that that's something that you respect.
I think that's a lot of part, because honestly, we have the perspective of, look, there's an old phrase by an American from 100 or so years ago, H.L. Mencken, and the quote goes, nobody ever went broke from underestimating the taste of the American public. And, yeah, what that means, of course, is that generally the masses have no taste. And if you want to sell to the masses something with no taste and sort of take advantage of them, you can do that and you can be profitable. And when we started Stone, we said, we don't want that customer. We only want people with good taste, and certainly brew beer for people that have good taste, and realizing that's not most people and that that's okay. Again, you know, your safety in numbers. If you're one of the people that doesn't like our beer, you can join the billions on this planet, the 99 point whatever percent of people that don't like our beer. So it's really frustrating to me. You know, it doesn't help the beer industry in Australia, which is struggling to, you know, the specialty beer industry is struggling to get off the ground, I would say. Now, this is saying, as you know, being said as a non-Australian who hasn't spent time there in the recent years, and I'd be thrilled to hear that, to be told that, no, it's much farther along than that. In fact, I'll pause because I'm kind of curious. Where do you think it is in the scale and the growth curve of specialty beer in Australia? Where do you think you're at these days?
Look, really accelerating. You know, still, we need more brewers. There's a whole lot of issues with excise and government barriers to the industry, but the small guys that are starting up are really, really passionate, and they're doing a great job to get their beers out there. They've got trouble getting taps. You know, we've got one of the most concentrated beer markets in the world with two major players, and they're able to go in and contract taps so they can't get it, and that's holding things back. But slowly but surely, there. You know, I don't talk about it being a revolution. I talk about it as being a series of local incursions at the moment.
Okay, fair enough. So, but the bottom line would be that small specialty brewers in Australia need the support desperately of Australians. And what happens when beer isn't treated properly by retailers? A consumer, whether they're experienced or not so experienced, has it. And they are not turned on to the category, they're turned away from the category. So it damages, and we experienced, it damages the industry. And we experienced this a lot in the middle 90s here in the United States. The bubble burst in 1996, and it went from a growth curve of 25 to 45% a year for the industry to 1996, it went to 7%, and then 1997, the growth curve was 2%. So it was like the brakes just got slammed on. And the reason why is because there were so many small brewers, retailers, wholesalers were just throwing shit against the wall. And the consumer became disengaged. They said, I don't want to spend this much money anymore to take a chance on something that doesn't taste very good. Now, the consumers weren't quite as savvy in the middle 90s here in the U.S. as they are now. So they didn't understand why they were having such poor experiences. Okay, flash forward to today. We've pulled ourselves back out of that as an industry, back out of that poor reputation. And now, universally, the craft brewers in the United States are brewing very good beer. Breweries you've never heard of, if you just take a chance, chances are you're going to get something that is, at worst, pretty nice. And often, really, really tasty. And so, as people take chances and are rewarded for the chances they took by having a great result and saying that was worth the money I spent, then you've got another convert. And then they buy more beer. And then they tell their friends and so on and so on. And having poor experiences has the opposite effect. It turns people off of the category. And that's why I will say, you know, direct to you, everybody in Australia, if you are a retailer who is knowingly selling damaged beer, beer in a way that the brewer would not approve of, you're hurting the industry, and you're hurting yourself. You're hurting your customer base. You're not allowing people to become engaged in what is possible in the world. You're allowing them to misbelieve and mistrust the experience that they had, and you know, mistrust the category. And you're not my friend. You don't support me. You don't support people like me. You don't support people who want this industry to grow and flourish and become what it can be. Instead, you're working against us. And just because I say, look, we're not ready to send our beer to Australia yet. We're in 35 of the 50 United States so far. So, you know, we don't even have our own country covered. We're not ready to send our beer. And we don't have enough of a reputation down there. And we don't have enough of a reputation. It wouldn't work. I can tell you, it would not work.
I'd not realize you weren't completely available across the states, because that's one of the things that a lot of the guys, they almost resent the fact that you don't respect our market enough to send it down here. But if you don't have it in all of the states, that's a pretty big issue.
If somebody is saying that we don't respect the market enough to send beer down there, they don't know me too well. I love Australia. I've had the chance to visit there. I think it's a wonderful country, and I would love nothing more than to be able to share our beer. But again, it's not tenable. Too long to get there, too expensive, and because it's so expensive, very slow movement in the marketplace. Very slow movement in the marketplace, old beer. You end up paying too much for it, you get a poor experience, you don't want to buy it again. That's not going to work. And we've been there. We actually just pulled out of Wisconsin here in the United States because of that very reason. We couldn't get enough of a critical mass going, and they didn't have enough of a core of specialty beer drinkers. So we had to go. We pulled our beer from the state because it was ending up old, and that's not acceptable.
Greg, I think we've pretty much thrashed out all of the issues, but one more I want to say is that if your beer doesn't travel well, I know you do, is there any chance we could get you down here one day to maybe do a collaboration with some of our young, exciting brewers?
That sounds like a fantastic idea. I really like that idea. One, that it's another chance to get down to Australia, and two, I'd love to revisit the craft brewing scene in Australia, and I love doing collaborations, and it would be a thrill. You know, I don't know if you've heard, but we're actually looking on opening a brewery in Europe. Are you familiar with that project?
Yep, seen that project.
So, and that's our response to Europe, and when we targeted Europe first, sorry that it wasn't Australia first, and that's why. It's because we need to go over there and brew it fresh, so it'll be fresher, more affordable, and timeline will, you know, will work, and carbon footprint. I mean, you know, let's just talk about carbon footprint for a second. Sending beer long distances, it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't make sense in the grand scheme. I'm okay with spending some specialty beers here and there. I think that's the spice of life. But the idea of sending commodity beers, which happens here a lot from Europe. We have commodity fizzy yellow beer coming from Europe, and we have fizzy yellow beer from here sending other places. And to those people that are doing that, I just say, you know, get off my planet because you're screwing it up for the rest of us.
Greg Cook, it's always great to listen to you. It's even better to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time. And, well, we'll see how people react.
Terrific. Thanks for engaging me in this conversation and bringing it up. I think it's very important. I've been extraordinarily frustrated by the lack of response. I either get no response or saying, no, we're just not going to respect what you're doing. Hopefully this will help people understand a little bit more about the decisions that are here. And so thanks, Matt.
No worries. Greg Cook, thanks very much.